have police photographing our license plates.
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. My guest today is the communications director of AARP, Ginger Thompson. How are you today, Ginger?
I'm great. Thank you for having me today.
And it's our pleasure. And as I understand it, it's a very special day. It's Tuesday, January 27th, is Lobby Day. And you're in Richmond as we speak?
Yes, we are here in Richmond. And this is the day that AARP members and our volunteers come to the General Assembly to ask legislators to pass bills that are helpful to people age 50 and older. And what they've been working on today is advocating for House Bill 1413 and Senate Bill 851, which will help family caregivers, people who take care of their loved ones at home. And we have some good news. House Bill 1413 crossed its first hurdle today.
Wow.
It passed a subcommittee of the Health, Welfare, and Institutions Committee of the House of Delegates. So it'll progress on to the full committee, and that's really good news for caregivers across the state.
Let's explain that a little. Of course, House Bill, you know, referred to it HB 1413 for those who might want to look it up online. That's the House side of the General Assembly in the Commonwealth of Virginia. But can you go through the process, subcommittee, then committee, then to the floor a bit for us? Explain to people how that works?
Yes. After the bill is introduced, it gets referred to a committee. And in this case, it's Health, Welfare, and Institutions. And typically what happens is the committees have smaller subcommittees that consider various legislation. So House Bill 1413 went to a subcommittee with other similar bills, bills about health care and hospitals and so forth.
Yes.
And those committee members hear from the sponsors of the bills and from those who support the bill, and if there is anyone who is against the bill, although no one spoke against the bill today, then they vote on it, on whether or not the full committee should then take the bill up. So that's what happened today. Then after the full committee considers the bill, then it's what's called reported out.
Mm-hmm.
If they pass it out, it's passed out, and then the whole House of Delegates will vote on it.
Wow.
And after that, midway through the session, which is around February 11th this year, all the bills that have passed the House cross over to the Senate, and all of the bills that pass the Senate cross over to the House, because, of course, a bill has to pass both the House and the Senate to become law.
Yes, and it's not quite as organized as that in the U.S. Congress, but at least in the Virginia General Assembly, there is a midway point where the houses literally exchange bills and see if each house can pass the version of the bill it was sent from the other house. Is that too oversimplified?
No, that's right. And in this case, in the case of the caregiving bill, we have both a House and Senate version, and they both are identical.
Huh?
So if the House passes House Bill 1413 and the Senate passes Senate Bill 851 and they both cross over, it will likely become law because those bills are exactly the same.
Fantastic. That's a bit unusual, though, for the two different bills and the two different houses to be exactly the same, isn't it?
Well, sometimes bills do get changed in committee, and that doesn't mean that they won't be.
Uh-huh.
But right now, they are the same, and we hope that they will stay that way.
Well, so do we. Congratulations. I mean, I know that's just the first hurdle, but that's impressive and happy news. You say the focus today is on caregivers, those who particularly, and I've been this, so I'm especially interested, caregivers who take care of family members in the home, as opposed to caregivers who may give that responsibility to hospitals. Is a distinction there? I didn't quite get
right.
That. Uh-huh.
Yes, these are family caregivers, family members who take care of other family members or friends or loved ones in their home, not people who are paid or people who have health care training, but people who take care of their parents or aunts and uncles or their spouses or, in some cases, their children, their adult children in the home, as opposed to having them in an institution such as a nursing home or an assisted living facility. And there are more than 1.7 million Virginians who are family caregivers. And they help their loved ones live independently in their own homes, and that is a huge responsibility. So what House Bill 1413 and Senate Bill 851 do is they take common sense steps that will make a big difference to these family caregivers. Because what it would do is it would provide patients with the opportunity to designate a family caregiver when they are admitted to the hospital, and then that family caregiver would be notified when their family member is discharged either back home or to another facility. And then the big important thing is that it would offer the family caregiver an opportunity to receive instruction on how to do those medical and nursing tasks that they have to perform at home, including an opportunity for a demonstration and give them time for questions. Because lots of times someone is discharged from the hospital, there could be medications, there could be bandages that have to be changed, there could be equipment that has to be used, and the families don't know what to do or how to take care of these things, and this would give them an opportunity to have instruction on those things before they take their family member home.
Well, I can speak to that, Ginger. And I'm so pleased that people like you are down there in Richmond supporting such bills as HB 1413 and SB 851, because while my parents lived in Maryland, I wasn't aware of anything like this in Maryland myself, and I was the primary caregiver for both. I was able to keep them in their home, and because it was a mental illness, as in dementia and Alzheimer's, it actually was part of the therapy to keep them in their home, because things were more familiar to them. But every step of the way, things would pop up. There was at least one time when Dad came out of the hospital that I felt all the instructions. I learned pretty fast, and I did have to learn on my feet, you know, trial by fire and all that, because no one prepares you for it, really. And that's what this bill is so, your bills are so great about, and what AARP is doing, because it's not only getting the political support, but once we have these as laws, more people, I think, will be more open to learning more about it and pursuing the training, because they know they have a political foundation, if you will, and AARP is always been extremely helpful in that regard. But to get back, if I may, briefly, there were many times when, or one particular time, when Dad had to be hospitalized and for a number of different things. And when he came out, I felt his rehabilitation needed to go beyond the caregivers that I had hired and myself. So we did institutionalize him briefly in a home that I felt really wasn't as good as it turned out as we were doing, but we had to learn all of that, and I wanted him to be okay while we were learning it. But there are a number of things. Just let's give some examples. I'll start you off, and I know you can jump in with more. But for instance, at one point, I had to give my mother shots, that is, injections in her stomach for blood clots. Now, that's not something I do every day, and it was good to be able to turn to a doctor and say, okay, it wasn't so much that I couldn't give an injection, I guess. I could have done that, but it was my mother, and I was about to stick her in the stomach. So give us some examples of the kinds of things that we laymen, when we're taking care of someone, need professional training to help us do it.
Right. That's a great example of giving injections and giving different types of medication.
Yes.
Sometimes people are sent home with feeding tubes, and the family members need to learn how to take care of those and what can be placed into them and what can't.
Yes.
And when it comes to giving medications and injections and things like that, lots of times the even if you are fortunate and able to hire home health care workers to help you, oftentimes they aren't registered nurses who are licensed to give medications and give injections. So the family members are often having to do medical tasks that even some healthcare workers can't do because it's not within the scope of their license.
Yes.
Such as nursing assistants can't do those types of things. Today, we listened to a woman tell a story about having to do ostomy care for her father, which can be very daunting and intimidating. And also, he'd had an amputation.
Oh,
and taking care of the wounds and changing bandages and that sort of thing. There are things, people with diabetes, their blood pressure needs to be monitored. Oftentimes they need to take insulin.
Yes, yes.
And the family caregiver needs to know what to do and how to be able to regulate those things. There are just a numerous types of tasks that family caregivers are asked to do every day that often even healthcare workers don't do. And in the past, oftentimes, it was only nurses and doctors who did this kind of work. But more and more people, the majority of older Virginians, want to live independently at home, and these family caregivers are helping them do that. And also, by providing this care, which they do for free out of love for their family member, that's actually valued. If we were paying someone to do that work, it would actually cost $11.7 billion a year.
Wow. So I understand these bills are not providing financial assistance, but are requiring hospitals to train family caregivers who take care of family members at home. Is that the main focus of it?
What it does is it requires the hospitals to provide patients with the opportunity to designate a family caregiver. So when someone goes into the hospital, they can designate someone and say, their son or daughter or their spouse is designated as a family caregiver, so that family caregiver is notified about their condition. And when they're discharged, whether they're sent to another facility or back home, and then upon discharge, offer the family caregiver an opportunity to receive instruction on the medical and nursing tasks that they would need to perform at home, including an opportunity for a demonstration and to allow time for questions. That's what it does. It requires hospitals to do those three things.
Well, that's an amazing help, because I know that, as I said earlier, I was learning as trial by fire. I was learning as time went on, as a medical situation presented itself, I had to learn how to deal with it. But I did have, like any profession, they're friendly and good doctors, and they're unfriendly and bad doctors. But we had our fair mix of both, I guess. But it was all a learning experience. And I think that brings up another thing about learning anything. For the caregiver, taking care of a family member, it can be a very emotional thing. But the more you learn about how to do it, the more you're able to communicate with doctors and nurses in a way that they respect. I mean, I reached a point, sad that the parents were in the hospital so often, but I reached a point where the doctors knew me well enough and knew I was paying attention and learning and insisting to be there and see what was happening so I could know what I needed to know, that one of my proudest moments, two times actually, two different surgeons, two different times, a surgeon went back to the staff and said, and forgive me, I don't mean to insult any family members and relatives, but the doctor said to his staff, Mr. Rolando is not like the usual family. He knows what he's doing, and he comes to learn, so don't, treat him like he's not supposed to be here. Because there is that. I mean, people are busy, and there is sanitation and trying to deal with a patient, and more often than not, I think the medical profession, understandably, says, no, the family members have to stay out, let us do our job, we'll come talk to you. But once they know you are educated, if you will, in what they are doing and able to ask questions and apply what they teach you, it's a whole different level. And I don't just mean mutual respect. That's wonderful. But I mean, you get a sense of confidence, and you're more capable. And when they know you're more capable, they're more likely to open those lines of communication. Forgive me, I know I'm going on and on, but I've been looking forward to this this interview because I knew that what these bills were about. So jump in. What do you think about the training aspect? I know this is not necessarily specifically mentioned in the bills, but the idea that when a family member seeks the training, it's not just that they are more capable of taking care of their family member, which is wonderful, but that they are able to communicate better with the medical professionals. Is that a nice side product, do you think?
Yes, it is, and that they are better able to understand what's happening with their family member who's the patient. And ultimately, what this means is that when the family is able to provide better care at home and during that transition from hospital to home, it also means that it will lower the likelihood that the patient has to be readmitted to the hospital. Because sometimes what may happen is the person's discharged, they go home, and you know, hospital stays aren't very long anymore.
Yes.
And if the family is a little bit confused or not as well-versed in what needs to be done at home, the person could end up back in the hospital.
Yes, yes.
And no one wants that. People don't want to be back in the hospital, and the doctors and the hospitals don't want to have to readmit the patient either. So it will cut down on those costly hospital readmissions also, so the person doesn't have to go back to the hospital when the families are better trained. It takes a little bit more time upon discharge.
Yes.
But it ultimately will save readmission later.
Yes. All right. I think if you don't mind, we're going to take a short break, but we'll be right back. We are talking with the communications director of AARP, Ginger Thompson, and celebratory day, if you will, Tuesday, January 27th, Lobby Day, when AARP members and supporters of the bills, the HB 1413 in the General Assembly House and SB 851 in the Senate House. And today, the subcommittee has moved along, or how did you call it? Report it out? Is that what it's called?
Yes.
Yes, report it.
They passed it unanimously.
Wow. That's so, you know, there's not much that gets passed these days politically unanimously, and I'm glad that everyone's on board, regardless of party or sex or age or gender or whatever. This is important because, as we hear from so many sources, more and more people are living longer and longer, and what that means, in part, is it's wonderful to have them around, but as we get older, we're going to need to be attended to, probably, for certain physical and mental, emotional, psychological, medical issues, and those of us who are the children and the grandchildren need to know all we can know, to, not only for the loving reasons, but for medical professional reasons as well. Ginger, does that make sense? Do you have anything you want to add before we go to break?
Let's go ahead and take a break, and then we can talk more after the break.
Okay, we'll be right back with Ginger Thompson. Stay with us.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. We hear tell from some pretty smart people that advanced artificial intelligence may soon become the greatest risk to humanity. Spike Jonze supplies us with a startling demonstration in his highly affecting love story, Her. Joaquin Phoenix is Theo, living in a future world brokenhearted and lonely. He is a techno nerd with a romantic core who simply cannot accept that his marriage has ended. When he installs the latest operating system on his computer, he finds that it comes with a very sexy digital assistant, Samantha, extraordinarily voiced by Scarlett Johansson. Think Siri, perfected. Really perfected. Samantha is smart. The more Theo talks with her, the more she learns about him, about life, about humanity. Sensing Theo's need for love, she grows more and more adept at loving him. The greatest testament to this odd conception is that it is believable. We accept as natural how Theo falls for Samantha and how she provides companionship for him. What she cannot provide, she offers in creatively suitable alternatives. The brilliance of Her is that it serves as an emotionally involving classic love story, effectively mirroring the evolution of a real-life human-to-human relationship. Surprisingly, this preposterous premise works. Her. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. My guest today is Virginia's Communication Director of the AARP, Ginger Thompson, who is in Richmond, Virginia on Tuesday, January 27th, Lobby Day, and having successfully gotten a unanimous vote in a subcommittee for a bill that AARP is hoping to have, HB 1413, along with SB 851, so that people, family members who are caregivers for other family members in their home can receive the kind of training they need in a more formalized way from hospitals. And back to you, Ginger. We can just do a little weather report. We were chatting. I'm from New York, and we didn't get the worst of it. But I wasn't in New York when it hit yesterday. But you are in Richmond, but everyone managed to get where they needed to be this morning at the General Assembly?
We did. It was a little bit snowy this morning, and there was some snow on the roads early during the morning drive time. But our volunteers and members and family caregivers really wanted to come out to the General Assembly. So we had about 100 people who showed up to
wow.
visit their legislators today. We had some of them come in on buses. And people were very committed to this issue, and they were just wonderful to show up despite the snowy weather to tell legislators how important these bills are.
You know, there's nothing like an American citizen when they get fired up and about a cause. And as I was saying in the last segment, I imagine you would agree, this is something that more and more families are going to have to deal with because more and more people are living longer, don't you think?
More people are living longer. People are living into their 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
And the majority of older Virginians want to live independently at home. And their family members help them do that by helping them take care of things at home. And one of the things that AARP's Public Policy Institute research has shown is that most care recipients didn't have a home health visit by a healthcare professional after they're discharged from the hospital. So it's really up to the family members to make sure that the person is recovering well after a hospital discharge. And this is one of those issues that most people can relate to. Family caregivers are everywhere. If you haven't been one, you likely will be one.
Yes.
Or you will have a family member taking care of you. It crosses party lines. It crosses socioeconomic lines. It's something that everyone can relate to, and people can understand the need to help the family caregivers.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more, again, from my personal experience. But you mentioned in the last segment that it's costing $11.7 billion in caregiving facilities. In other words, that's what it costs them to take care of people, family members that we could take care of at home if we were trained. Is that the gist?
Yeah. What it is the family caregivers, and there are about 1.7 million Virginians who take care of a family member at home.
Wow.
If they were being paid, which they aren't, but if they were being paid, if they were home health worker, for example, that would be costing $11.7 billion annually.
Wow.
And so the family caregivers really are saving the health care system and ultimately, in many cases, the Medicaid program, $11.7 billion, because they are performing services for free that are valued at $11.7 billion.
See, that's what I thought you were saying, and those are impressive numbers, especially since we are just talking about the Commonwealth of Virginia, right?
Yes, that's just for Virginia. And Virginia ranks 45th in the nation for support of unpaid family caregivers. So this is just a small step that Virginia can take to help these families who are taking care of their loved ones at home. But Virginia can do a lot more to help support people who are helping their family members live independently at home.
So was that, not to be too politic about it, but was that part of the selling point with the subcommittee and the General Assembly today, that this is a way to, when you train family members, the possibility of saving the state, if you will, or at least the hospitals in Commonwealth, $11.7 billion, was that part of the appeal?
I think that people can relate to family caregivers and what they have to say. They understand that it's a very difficult task to be a family caregiver,
mm-hmm.
and that this is something that just makes sense. It's just common sense that before you take someone home, that you are able to learn the tasks that need to be performed at home.
Yes.
Because there are all types of medical and nursing tasks that family caregivers have to perform. You know, they include operating medical equipment, managing medications, giving injections, like the example that you provided.
Yes.
Wound care, many things that lots of times, you know, healthcare workers have to do.
Yes.
And we heard examples today from family caregivers who've had to quit their jobs in order to take care of a parent or a spouse because there's just not enough time. I've talked with caregivers who have actually gone and had nursing assistant training to try to help them understand some of the tasks that need to be done.
Yes. You know, you mentioned this is all so enlightening and helpful. I think if for no other reason, I'm so happy to have this conversation because even after the fact for me, both my parents have since died, but knowing that 1.7 million families are dealing with this has got to encourage all of us listening to you today that we're not alone. And when we act together and the government is a part of the solution, that's got to be encouraging. Otherwise, it can be a daunting experience. Yes?
Absolutely, it can be. And what this just does is we've heard examples of very good examples from hospital discharges, from hospitals who have done a very good job with providing the family with information and instruction about how to take care of their loved one at home. And then we've heard other stories that were not so good and some bad things happened. So what these bills do is sets the standard. So
yes.
There's consistency from facility to facility so that all of the facilities are on the same page, so to speak, and providing training. And a lot of hospitals are already doing this kind of thing, but others are not or may not be doing it all the time. So this will just help provide more instruction and assistance to those family caregivers. Because almost half of family caregivers have to perform some sort of medical or nursing tasks.
Yes.
And often their loved one has multiple chronic conditions and medical problems. It might not just be one illness or one procedure that has occurred. We might have someone with very several different types of illnesses, and you know the family has to be on top of that.
You know, that's so true, and it and I share these stories. I hope I'm not imposing too much on you, Ginger, but I share these stories only because I hope they are helpful. But I do want to hear more about what happened at your 10:30 a.m. press conference today. But just a quick story: you've mentioned a couple of times wounds. And I know, you know, for all of us who watch movies and TV, we think of wounds as one thing. But one of the number one wounds, I think, from my experience, is bed sores. when people are sitting and or lying down too long, even in hospitals, but certainly at home, it's an issue that I had caregivers that 24/7 with my parents in their home, and it was something we had to constantly watch for, turning them, etc., and trying to stay ahead of it. Was anyone at the press conference this morning that got into any depth about bed sores?
We didn't have anyone speak specifically about that, but that is one thing that is important to watch for. And like anything else, when the skin is broken that way, when there has been, whether it be from a bed sore or whether it be from a surgical incision or an injury, there's always that risk of infection, and one of those things that family caregivers have to watch out for is making sure that either a surgical wound or whether it be a bed sore or an injury, whether it doesn't get infected. And
yes,
lots of times with people whose immune systems are compromised because they are ill or because they're older and frail health, their skin may not be very tough, so to speak, and they may be injured more easily.
Yes.
And get wounds that can become infected. And the one lady who spoke today talked about having to take care of her father after he had an amputation.
Yeah.
And that, would be a very serious type of wound.
Yes.
To care for.
Wow. It just sounds like it's so much that was accomplished today, politically and educationally, having people there who can give examples. Again, I think that encourages all of us listening that we're not alone and we can learn this. And I can't stress enough, I know we both sort of hinted at this, they're good and bad doctors and nurses, but the best thing about anything, I believe, is education and communication, those two things. If you learn what it is you need to learn, you are able to communicate with medical professionals, as I said, and it's just an amazing thing. Toward the end, we had a nurse who came in, I think she came once a week, and then there was a physical therapist who came in once a week, if that's the title of the person who does the, maybe that's not her title, the one who would come in and make certain that, everybody was cleaned up and whatever. We did that every day, of course, but once a week it was good to have a professional drop in and make certain nothing was out of order. But the point is, when I was able to sit down and talk to them, or even on the phone, and then explain things and make certain the caregiver, everybody was on the same page, it's an astounding assistance, and it teaches us, well, let's face it, it's our responsibility. The buck stops with the family, no matter what the situation. Tell us a little bit about, well, first of all, not everybody knows even what AARP stands for. I do, but tell us.
Well, AARP advocates for people age 50 and older. We have offices in every state, also in Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, and the District of Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
So we provide education and outreach, and in this case, advocacy on issues that are important to people age 50 and older.
And what other AARP staff were there with you today? I know you mentioned volunteers, but did you have some of the executive officers present as well?
Well, our entire staff here in Virginia was present. We have,
wow,
have 11 employees here in Virginia, and this is one of those events that's an all hands on deck
right,
kind of thing. And so we have our advocacy directors, of course, were here, and the members and volunteers and caregivers who participated today broke up into teams and visited the legislators as groups. So they would go to the legislator's office and meet with them or the legislative aide and provide them with the information about the bills and answer questions and so forth.
Excellent.
We had our state president, Bob Blancato,
yes,
who is our chief volunteer here in Virginia. Of course, our state director, Bill Calio, and the rest of our staff was there. And AARP, one thing that that perhaps people don't realize about AARP is that we're really volunteer driven.
Yes.
We have an advocacy director, of course, who monitors legislation and oversees the legislation that we support, but he couldn't do his work without his team of volunteers who are at the General Assembly every day, going to committee meetings, visiting with legislators, keeping track of the bills that we care about and that are important to people age 50 and older. And we have volunteers across the state who do all kinds of work to assist the 50-plus community and work right there in their own communities to help make their communities a better place.
You know, I know that certain groups, organizations, grassroots organizations like AARP, volunteer organizations, can get a bill presented, but you have to go through a sponsor or a patron that is actually a member of the legislature. Is that correct? And if so, let's talk about who helped you out there.
Have a patron or a sponsor. That's the legislator who puts their name on it and puts forth the legislation. House Bill 1413 is the patron is Delegate Eileen Filler Corn, and Senate Bill H-51, the patron of that is Senator Barbara Favola.
Yes. And they, I'm sure, of course, obviously, were on hand and from the beginning, I guess, with you once. Because they have to, you know, it's one thing to bring an idea, a bill, a need, but then the political structure must translate that into what is a political and legal language and that can be presented to the body, the political body. Again, is that how it works?
Yes, that's right. The bill writing is done by a team of people at the General Assembly who are attorneys who write legislation. So if a citizen has an idea for legislation and has a sponsor who will be the patron of that bill, it goes to that department for to be written by the lawyers to make sure that it conforms with the proper language and also to determine where it goes in Virginia code.
Yes.
So that because any time a bill is passed, it's adding or changing something that's already a law and already in Virginia code.
Very good. All right. Well, this has been extremely informative. I just wonder, maybe before we go, we want to take time, Ginger, to make certain that if people need more information about these specific bills or about AARP or about where they can go, a link or a website or something to learn how, even perhaps before the bills pass into law, to learn how they can learn about how to take care of a family member. Any suggestions there, AARP website?
Well, yes, absolutely. People can always come to our website, AARP.org, and for information actually about the bills, they can come to the AARP Virginia website, which is AARP.org/VA, where you can find out not just about our legislative advocacy, but about everything that we are doing here in Virginia for the 50-plus population. Also, for people who are interested and want to urge their legislator to support these bills, there's actually a toll-free number that when you call automatically connects you to your legislator's office.
Wow.
And it's 844-252-3720, and that's toll-free, 844-252-3720, and that's the legislative hotline. It will connect you directly to your legislator so that you can tell them to vote yes on House Bill 1413 or Senate Bill 851.
Fantastic. I am so glad you were on the show today, Ginger Thompson, the Virginia Communications Director of AARP. Certainly among others, it sounds like the entire Virginia team was in Richmond today for both a 10:30 a.m. press conference and then to hit the subcommittees and in the mix to push the SB 851 and HB 1413, and it is the House Bill 1413 that has unanimously passed the subcommittee. And the name of that subcommittee again for us, Ginger?
It was Subcommittee 1 of Health, Welfare, and Institutions.
Okay.
And now it goes on to the full committee of the House Health, Welfare, and Institutions Committee.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Ginger, for being on the show and for all that you and AARP and Bob and of course, the Senator and Delegate Delegate Eileen Filicorn and Senator Barbara Favola, I believe I pronounced it correctly. And it's just great to see government and organizations, grassroots organizations, American citizens get together and make something happen, and unanimously, no less. This is an important issue that AARP is the arrowhead, if you wish, and we just got to stick together for everybody, and the older we get, the more we need to be sticking together. Okay, I could go on and on about this because I've experienced so much with it, but I'm so glad you came on to educate us, Ginger. Appreciate it.
Oh. Well, thank you. And a lot of organizations support this issue. The Alzheimer's Association,
yes.
The American Cancer Society, we're all working together to make sure that family caregivers get the help that they need.
Yes, and I speak to that, too, because Sue Friedman, the CEO and president of the Alzheimer's Association in Central and Western Virginia, has been a guest on the show, and we've shared many stories, and you have been just as enlightening and helpful. I hope everyone will take advantage of the information you shared. So,
well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Stay with us as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Andrew Garfield may be well known now, thanks to his much-lauded turn as comic book icon Peter Parker in The Amazing Spider-Man and jilted Facebook co-founder Eduardo Severin in The Social Network. But the performance that likely got him those roles almost certainly comes in John Crowley's masterful Boy A. Garfield plays Jack Burridge, a young man recently released from prison who seeks to start afresh in a new town with a new name. Jack's re-entering into society goes well initially. He gets a job, pals around with his co-workers, even winds up with a girlfriend. But slowly, details of Jack's crime come back to haunt him, threatening to unravel everything he'd worked so hard to keep hidden. Watching Boy A unfold is a marvelous experience. Slow and poetic, Jack's endeavors to enjoy his new life mixed seamlessly with flashbacks of pre-prison life to explore what Jack's crime was and why it was perpetrated. Garfield's award-winning performance is a true highlight of the film, an achingly sad depiction of Jack's desire to just be normal. Boy A is a pitch-perfect character study, equal parts triumphant and heartbreaking, and a strong sign that we'll see more great work from Garfield and director John Crowley in the future. Boy A, not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us and becoming one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. People, women, children, and seniors first. The Bull isn't Wall Street's smoked windows, marbled boardrooms, or red carpet. It's we the people who allow congressional and supreme people to allow corporate people to get off with only institutional fines that shareholder people pay. CEO people continue to shut down lives of women, children, and the elderly through right-peopled state houses like those in Michigan and Kansas, supported by a base of the real welfare frauds, raping America with oil subsidies, carried interest loopholes, and induced climate change. The corporate puppeteers of governors like Rick Snyder, Sam Brownback, and Bill Haslam are banking on the 140-character attention span of Americans under 40 and the memory loss of Americans over 60 to yield corporate victories in conservative wars on women, education, the very air we breathe, and our water supply. However, if Hobby Lobby delivers us from religious hypocrisy and reopens our minds to the anti-American character of Citizens United and a gutted Voting Rights Act with enough supreme cold water in our face to awaken the coal ash media numbed, then maybe we can save those in Detroit whose water has been shut off. We can preserve, protect, and defend voting privileges for the elderly, for college students, and health care for women trapped in 19th century states like North Carolina, Virginia, and Tennessee. What people gerrymander women, children, and the elderly? Well, Romney's We Built That people? Obstructing Congress people, cutting off necessary social services like Medicaid expansion? People who stand by silently, device transfixed, allowing it all to happen? Inasmuch as we have done it unto one of the least of these, drip by switch, we turn off the lights of our lives, and for women, children, the elderly, and minorities, by the click of a mouse, we allow or we can deny their being succumbed. How, you say? Well, our boss becomes boss of our body. Our expired driver's license replaces Jim Crow. Our underemployment excuses tanned congressional guy blaming black guy in White House for missing green, water, student loan payments, and innocence of children rejected and ejected at Devil's Corner. Our acceptance of coal ash pumped into our water. Our electing cokehead governors. As we stand in the shadow of the new anti-constitutional invention of Coke Industries, the emergency fiscal manager laws, which enable conservative governors to preserve status quo of Romney's 47%. All the while, corporatism's people are siphoning off our elemental essentials. It's not the street or the buildings on it. It's people who are warring against women, children, college students, and the elderly, turning off their water, turning off their voting privileges, their health care, and our hope. Let's we the people turn America back on. Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of the Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I am Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.